Good evening. I'm Michael Carey, the moderator of this year's running programs. Thank you for joining us. Tonight and throughout this week, you will have a chance to meet and hear from legislative candidates running for seats throughout South Central Alaska. We invited all the candidates to participate. Those appearing on the program are those who accepted our invitations. Candidates who are running unopposed have been given a chance to talk directly to voters. Joining me tonight are reporters Daisha Eaton of KSK Radio and Kyle Hopkins of the Anchorage Daily News. Now let's meet the Republican candidate for Senate District F, Fred Dyson. We invited his Democratic opponent, Martin Lendeck, but he declined to participate. Fred Dyson, why don't you take 1 minute for an opening statement, please?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you all for doing this. I have lived in the state since 64, mechanical engineer by trade and training. I worked 13 years in the oil industry, mostly at Prudhoe. Been a commercial fisherman, worked on engineering projects in Western Alaska, mostly power plants, water and wastewater, and six or seven marine science projects on which I ran a research vessel. I got involved, served my apprenticeship on the Anchorage Assembly back in the late 80s, and been a legislature for a lot longer than I ever expected. And certainly my expertise is in natural resources development and pay a lot of attention to those, but my great passion is children, particularly abused children in our state. And wife and I have had a lot of foster kids and been up close and personal to what happens to abused children here.
Okay, let's return to our reporters and their questions. We'll start with Daisha Eaton.
Mr. Dyson, you're running on a platform and you're running against the coalition. How will this help cooperation down in Juneau?
Yeah, the so-called everybody getting together and working together is a grand theory, and it certainly we see some of that in parliamentary forms of government. Almost always a coalition government has to avoid dealing with the difficult issues and the hard ones and only deal with the things that are kind of central, and largely for the last few years, and I've been 6 years in the minority, it's been the fiscal issues, and the tougher issues don't get dealt with. And it's a grand theory, and it's worked fairly well. I'm hoping indeed that there is a strong majority that can push forth in dealing with some of the really tough stuff.
Let's go to Kyle Hopkins.
Mr. Dyson, you have opposed legalizing gay marriage in Alaska. My question is about the benefits enjoyed by married couples that are not available to gay and lesbian couples. And in particular, I'm thinking of a case in Anchorage where there was a woman who has filed a lawsuit asking for survivor benefits after her partner was shot and killed at the Millennium Hotel. Should she get that money?
Yeah. My objection to the making, I do not believe that same-sex marriage is a moral and legal equivalent of one man, one woman. But I'm all in favor of laws that will allow same-sex couples to get some of the benefits of it. As you probably know, the state has faced with the issue, has gone through an elaborate process to allow the spouses or significant others of state employees to meet a criteria and be treated as if it. But you got to remember also, once you decide that marriage is outside of the traditional definition, then you have a strong time arguing why multiple partners, you know, multiple wives or husbands, or even incest should not be legal. And once you move away from that criteria, I happen to believe that the family, the nuclear family, is a paradigm that has worked very well, got lots of problems, but very well down the ages, and is the ideal one for children to be raised in.
Daisha Eaton.
So as you said earlier, you've been in public office for a long time, almost 30 years, I believe?
I don't think so. It's been, I think it's 16 in the legislature, and then there was six in a long period in between, or quite
okay.
a period.
So maybe a little six.
We got you over 20.
So some people might say someone who's been in office that long could be a professional politician. Are you one or not?
No, and I've kept working and so on. And our system is supposed to be set up on a citizen legislature who has experience and anchor in the real world out there and comes and brings whatever particular expertise in it and so on. And there's a real movement for throw all the bums out or term limits. And I'm sympathetic to that one. But you got to remember, as soon as you do that, you transfer a huge amount of power to the executive branch and entrenched bureaucracy. And I hope we can elect people a lot smarter than me. But let me tell you, it takes a long time to figure out how the system works. And the state's business is very complicated. And so it takes a while for people to even begin to understand all of the issues and to deal with just the momentum of an entrenched bureaucracy and always doing things the way we always did it.
Let's go to Kyle Hopkins.
I would just like to follow up on my previous question. I was looking for a yes or no answer to that the question about the woman who was asking for survivor benefits after her partner was shot at the hotel.
Sure, and as this issue becomes more and more prevalent and so on, people need to establish those when they either enter into the relationship or enter into an employment situation. Once the employer and or their insurance and so on and so forth has an established procedure and a program and so on to go back and try to change it on a one-off case is not legitimate. That's kind of ex post facto stuff. But if indeed they want to, as a condition of employment and so on and so forth, establishment, I'm fine with that. And if there needs to be something in the statutes to allow that choice, I'm open to it. But I'm not going to force the employer to cover a non-married partner.
Dasha Eaton.
Let's talk a little bit about education. Article 7, Section 1 of our state constitution says that schools and institutions so established shall be free from sectarian control. No money shall be paid from public funds for the direct benefit of any religious or other private educational institution. That said, you said you're for choice in education. But should we be using public monies to fund charter schools and private schools or parochial schools?
We're already doing it with charter schools, and we're also doing it with so-called cyber schools and so on. And I'm very much in favor of that. What I prefer is that the money be attached to the student and the parents make those choices, and that poor folks, particularly with limited resources, be able to have the same choice that rich people do. And so I've been an enthusiastic sponsor of the parental choice bills that have been in the legislature. And it's an open argument whether the Blaine Amendment type language and so on and so forth precludes the parents and the child making a selection of any sort as long as it's a recognized school. So I'm not going to exclude schools that have some religious ties from people with limited income being able to go, and that means that particularly the state money that goes with the child to where the parents choose. By the way, I'd recommend you see the film it's in town called Won't Back Up.
Okay. So do you think the Constitution needs to change, or?
Yeah, that's an open question. I suspect if indeed some of the present legislation goes through, that will be tested in court.
Okay, let's go back to Kyle Hopkins.
Maybe I'll just follow up on education. Listening to your answer, I wonder, what's your view on regional high schools? If money should follow the student, what about in rural Alaska, where the cost of education is very expensive and sometimes schools are in danger of closing? What's your view of the idea of having high school kids go to regionalized high schools?
Yeah. There's one where we have some cognitive dissonance, and the rules we put on for schools having teachers with significant kinds of expertise and so on is just not practical in very small schools. And the things we're doing with cyber education are really helping that and so on. But my guess, in the end, we will make the choice for once again for regional schools. And there's some horror stories out there about abuse that happened at residential schools and so on, but there's a significant record of very successful education in some of those regional schools. Covenant High in Unalakleet, Sheldon Jackson in Sitka and so on are good examples of those working well. Not ideal, but I think we'll get back to that as only the only practical solution.
Daisha Eaton.
The words energy independence are being tossed around out there a lot right now. Can you explain what this phrase means to you and what this concept might look like in Alaska?
Sure. Alaska happens to be a treasure house of natural resources, maybe the best mining prospects in the entire world, and certainly very rich oil province. I want our continent to be capable of energy independence so that a military or an economic foe can't strangle us by cutting off our oil and natural gas because we're dependent on others. So I want us to have those resources developed enough that we can use them and not be blackmailed by anybody. You can imagine what happened to the Department of Defense's budget if they didn't have to fend our energy supply sources all over the world, and what a bend that puts in our foreign policy. So I want our continent to be energy independent and at least have that option in place.
Kyle Hopkins.
Mr. Dyson, you mentioned how the issue of child abuse is something that is important to you and has been throughout your career. I'm curious about the fact that child abuse, that sexual abuse rates remain so high in Alaska. And we've known that they're high for years, for decades. Why has the state failed to make any what seems like significant progress to stop that problem?
Well, I wish that we could pass a law that would make families near perfect and that they would stay together and raise their children as healthy, cherished, and safe. Isn't happening. And so most of the abuse happens in less than optimal family situations, often by family members, which is a huge tragedy. Children that are particularly sexually abused by folks that they ought to be able to trust are traumatized on a level that's profound and have difficulty ever trusting anybody, and huge problems with self-esteem. We can't solve the law by passing, or solve the problem by passing laws. We're trying to get people educated, educated how to avoid, having the courage to report and putting the bad guys away and providing treatment for not only the victims, but those around them who should have been looking after them and should have blown the whistle.
Okay. Mr. Dyson, we have to go to Daisha Eaton for our last question before we go to your closing statement. Daisha Eaton.
You've said that you believe in protecting life from conception. If you're elected, would you work toward repealing laws that allow abortion without parental notification?
I want parents to be notified and have a go, no-go decision on that. And I'm in favor of protecting children all the way from conception. We have a huge problem with them being poisoned with alcohol, fetal alcohol spectrum, 5 times the national rate. And I held one of my foster daughters in my arms, born with a pulse rate of 235 from cocaine, you know. And just huge, huge issues with child abuse all the way from conception, probably through my age.
Let's go to your final statement, Fred Dyson, of 1 minute.
Yeah, our state faces some significant issues. Most of the ones that get a lot of press time are the fiscal issues, the natural resources development things, federalism in terms of an overreaching federal government that greatly restricts our own stewardship of our own resources, and I will not neglect those issues because they're both primary and areas where I have some expertise. But indeed, the issues that engage me are the abuse of children, disintegrating families, and a culture that is far more tolerant of evil things than it ought to be. And I want to be some small part in calling us back to our noble traditions and looking after the most vulnerable in our population.
Thank you, Mr. Dyson. Next on Running, we will hear from the unopposed candidates for House District 11 and District 12, and the Democratic and Republican candidates for Senate District G. Please stay with us.
Hi, this is Bill Stoltz. Thanks for the opportunity to communicate with the people of Chugiak, Peters Creek, Fairview Loop, Lazy Mountain, and the Butte tonight. It's an honor to have represented these communities over the last 10 years. We have some significant accomplishments in education. We've worked towards increased funding, but meaningful funding, cyber education, charter schools, technology, and things like an ROTC program in Wasilla. Roads have been a top priority. I'm proud to have worked with the Mat-Su Borough to have matched with state funding the locally approved road bonds, bringing $64 million total funding for local roads that voters voted on. I'm also real proud of the work we've done toward anchoring an economic development plan for the Mat-Su so we can entice private sector and create a real economy in the valley. And real economy in the valley and meaningful jobs, not just in the government sector, but long-term opportunity for the people of the Mat-Su. Public safety has been another real success, adding troopers, working on victims' rights, and meaningful crime packages to address the drugs of the day that are out to attack and prey on our kids. Real excited this year in the upcoming session because of a lot of my strong conservative colleagues that are stepping up are women. Folks like Gabrielle Ledoux, Lynn Gaddis, Shelley Hughes, Lisa Vaught, C.N. Stevens, and Laura Reinbolt. Looking forward to serving with these strong women in this next legislative session. Again, thank you for the opportunity to communicate to. Please check me out on my website, billstoltz.com, or call me at home.
Good evening, and thanks to KAKM for having me on Running. I'm Representative Dan Sadler, and I've been honored to represent Chugiak, Eagle River, and Jay Bear in the State House for the past 2 years. I'm running for re-election to the new District 12, which includes Birchwood, Chugiak, Downtown Eagle River, Fort Rich, and Skyline Drive. I'm running because I want to keep serving the people of my district and because I want to keep working on Alaska's toughest issues. In my first term, I've been pleased to get some good work done. I sponsored and got passed a bill to create a veteran's designation on state driver's licenses and ID cards. We authorized military facility zones to help position Alaska's bases against a base realignment and closure. We got funding for a new Chugiak Volunteer Fire Department station and for an important school, bridge, and road projects in our district. We authorized letting school children who are homeschooled participate in interscholastic activities and sports at their local schools. And we got health insurance to cover services for children with autism. This is good work, but there's much more work to be done. Alaska faces many challenges. We need to revise state oil laws to keep our economy healthy. We need to secure affordable, reliable energy by building a natural gas pipeline, building the Susitna-Wetana High Dam, and improving our energy efficiency utilization. We need to resist unsustainable growth in state government and budgets. We need to take care of our roads, schools, and other infrastructure, make sure that any taxes we charge are low and the regulations we impose are reasonable, and we need to defend our state's rights as a sovereign state in the nation. I would like to keep working for you in the State House on these issues. Again, I'm Dan Sadler. I would be honored to have your vote on November 6th. Thank you very much.
Election day is November 6th. From the presidential race to Alaska's at-large House seat to ballot measures, every vote matters. Every issue matters. Hi, I'm Peter Granitz, APRN's Washington, D.C. correspondent. I'll be at the Denina Center election night, recapping the national races and what it means for our state. What happens if the Senate changes hands? Will Congress remain divided? Can an election remedy some of the brinksmanship? And how can Alaska regain some clout at the Capitol? Tune in to KSKA Anchorage on Tuesday night, November 6th, for APRN's special election night coverage.
Hello, I'm Ellen Lockyer. On November 6th, voters will be selecting their choices for state and national offices, and KSKA will provide listeners updates on election results starting at 9 p.m. I'll be at Election Central in Anchorage to bring you live candidate interviews and the very latest returns during KSKA's special statewide November election roundup. Stay tuned to 91.1 FM for election coverage from KSKA.
Join KSKA on election night, Tuesday, November 6th. NPR coverage continues at 7 p.m. and statewide coverage from the Alaska Public Radio Network begins at 9 p.m. You are listening to Running on KSKA Anchorage. Now here's Annie Feit to tell you about the ballot propositions.
This is Annie Feit in the APRN newsroom. They haven't received as much attention as the statewide and legislative races, but there are two ballot propositions Alaskans will vote on November 6th. One is a bond package that would allow the state to borrow nearly $500 million for transportation and infrastructure projects. The other asks Alaskans to decide whether the state should hold a convention to amend or revise the Constitution. The state constitution requires that the question appear on the ballot every 10 years. The question is simply, shall there be a constitutional convention? One of the original convention delegates plans to vote no. Vic Fisher spent the winter of 1955 and 56 hammering out the details of the state's constitution with 54 other delegates. He thinks there are some parts of the constitution that could use revising, but he says Alaskans are too divided these days to make changes that will stand the test of time. He says it was very different half a century ago.
Alaskans were unified in favor of statehood, and the Constitution was written before we were becoming a state. You did not have lobbyists. You did not have special interests pushing in this direction and that direction, trying to get their specific babies into the Constitution as you would have today.
But another elder statesman of Alaska politics has a different point of view. Former Attorney General John Havelock has written a book, Let's Get It Right, arguing it's time for the state to hold another constitutional convention. He thinks the state's constitution is an excellent piece of work, but he has a long list of changes he says should be made to make the document more relevant, including protecting the permanent fund, making the legislature unicameral, and fixing the initiative process. He doesn't agree with the argument that special interests would sway the process.
There's always contention in politics, but we live in a democracy and we should let the people have a say-so on some of these essential issues that have been effectively neglected by the legislature. So I just don't think that some of these awful things that people suggest are going to happen are going to happen.
Alaska Federation of Native Convention Delegates recently approved a resolution urging members to vote for a new constitutional convention to establish subsistence priority for Alaska Natives. The constitutional convention question has appeared on the ballot four times previously. It has been voted down by large margins every time, except the first time it appeared in 1970. That year, the referendum was approved by a few hundred votes. But on that ballot, the question was poorly worded. A judge ordered a new vote, and Alaskans then turned it down. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
You're listening to Running on KSKA Anchorage, FM 91.1. You can find Monday through Friday night's schedule for Running on KSKA and Alaska Public Television at alaskapublic.org.